case for argument, United States versus Fisher. Ms. Ball.
May it please the court. Sean Fisher pled guilty to a conspiracy to possess and distribute cocaine. At the sentencing hearing, the district court added a three-level sentence enhancement for his alleged role as a manager in this conspiracy pursuant to Section 3B1.1 of the sentencing guidelines. The issue for review is whether or not the district court made a mistake when it imposed this enhancement. The guideline commentaries list seven factors that a court should consider before imposing this enhancement. I won't list them here, but the government argues that it is very easy to qualify for the manager enhancer because it only has to prove two things. One, that there was a five-person conspiracy, and two, that the defendant exercised control over one other member of that conspiracy. As a policy matter, this finding of control over one other person can be the starting point, but not the ending point of the court's analysis, because the sentencing guideline commentary also states that this manager adjustment is aimed at concerns about relative responsibility. And we have Seventh Circuit cases such as Brown and Vargas and Mustreed, which underscore the fact that when a defendant's role in a crime is no greater than the role of other members of the conspiracy, then he should not receive that enhancement. Now, in this case, if the court looks at the record, and which is essentially the PSR, and it looks at what Mr. Fisher did, and it compares what Mr. Fisher did in relation to what the other members of the conspiracy did, it will find Bubbles, who, according to the PSR, supplied a seemingly endless amount of cocaine for Fisher's and others' use. He made repeated trips to Texas in order to purchase cocaine, and it was a risky business because he
Fisher
was...
Fisher recruit Bubbles?
There is no evidence in the PSR that Fisher recruited Bubbles. I would say to the contrary, since it was Bubbles, the PSR does say that Bubbles initially supplied Fisher with cocaine. It was probably the other way around, but the PSR does not directly address that fact. Bubbles also, the PSR is very clear that Bubbles controlled the money on each of these trips down to Texas. He negotiated drug transactions there, and he reduced drug debts of co-conspirators. We also have Mullins, who negotiated drug deals in Texas, picked up wire transfers, and arranged for transportation of drugs. We have Kinney, who wired money for the purchase of drugs to Texas and provided the transportation both for the group and for the drugs from Texas back to Wisconsin.
But he did recruit some of the members of this conspiracy, didn't he?
Yes, he did. The government has, I think, alleged that he recruited four members, or maybe it was the district court who made that statement. But if you look at the PSR, it says there were two people that Fisher did recruit, and they were...
And didn't he finance a number of these trips?
He supplied some of the money. It's not clear how much of the money he supplied on all of the trips. There is, however, case law, Your Honor, that says recruitment of a member to a conspiracy isn't enough to prove that the person doing the recruiting is the manager. You have to prove control.
And didn't he claim that he was entitled to the largest share of the proceeds?
No, that he did not, Your Honor. That is a conclusion that is at the end of the PSR. It's a conclusion that the district court repeated. But if you read the facts outlined in the PSR, there's no mention.
Did he challenge that characterization?
What he challenged was whether or not this was a group effort or not.
No, but that conclusion by the probation officer, was that challenged?
He didn't challenge the facts because the facts underlying it were never alleged, Your Honor. I mean, no one said...
What do you mean facts were never alleged? This probation officer said that Fisher claimed that the major share of the profits. Now, did Fisher tell the district court that's wrong?
No, not at the sentencing hearing, but if I could qualify my argument on this point. If you look at the PSR, there's a portion of it that describes the role, the criminal conduct, basically, the offense conduct. And in there, that's where there's no facts alleged to support a conclusion that comes at the end, where the
conclusion is a statement about Fisher's claim. Did the probation officer speak to Fisher?
That the answer to that question I don't believe is in the record, but I do think they may have interviewed him.
Well,
I'm
if they
sure.
interviewed him, and they say in the report he claimed that he was entitled to the major share of the profits, then doesn't he have to challenge that if he wants to make an issue of it?
I don't believe the PSR says he claimed he was entitled to a larger share of the profits. I believe it says Fisher claimed a, in other words, they're saying Fisher took a larger share of the profits.
So you're saying that's the probation officer's conclusion.
Exactly, Your
yes.
Honor.
And the question is, was that raised with the district court, that conclusion?
Not
you
that
can certainly challenge that at the sentencing, the conclusion that the probation officer drew.
Fisher's trial counsel did not stand up and say, hey, I didn't get more of the fruits of the crime. The point
is that the probation officer was wrong in making this conclusion because there weren't any facts to support it. Was that argument made to the district court?
That specific argument, no.
Was not made.
That's right, Your Honor. What he did say, though, is he said, I was no more responsible than anyone else. I'm challenging this under must read. I'm challenging the legal conclusion that the district court made, which was basically rubber stamping the conclusion that the probation officer made. And when you take that statement, well, Fisher claimed a larger share of the fruits of the crime, that's a statement that's straight out of the factors from the sentencing guidelines. It's just a repetition of one of the factors from that you have to consider here. And you would suppose that there would be some evidence in there to support it. For example, to say, Fisher supplied this amount of money, and when it came back, he took not only the amount of cocaine he paid for, but extra.
That's not what the probation officer said. He said, quote, Fisher claimed the right to a larger share of the fruits of the crime, close quote. Now, that sounds as if an acknowledgement by Fisher that he was entitled to a larger share, whether he got it or not, it would be a different question. He considered himself, you know, the kingpin, so he should get the largest share.
I understand your point, Your Honor. I read it differently. I read it to say Fisher took a larger share of the
But it doesn't
crime.
Say claimed that. It said claimed a right.
right.
It doesn't say took a larger share. It said claimed a right. Claiming a right isn't the same thing as taking. You have to enforce your right.
Didn't Fisher pay the expenses for the all these trips to Texas?
It's clear that Fisher supplied money to finance, or at least to purchase drugs, but it's not clear where all of the money came from.
Well, is there the evidence that came from other sources? I thought he provided all the money.
He did, it sounded like, on the first trip, although some of it was borrowed from someone. I don't know what that person's relationship to the group was. But I don't believe it says in the PSR that on each one of these, Fisher was a sole supplier.
Well, there was $10,000 on the first trip. That was clearly Fisher's money, wasn't it?
It was half his and half whoever he borrowed the money from.
Then when there was a problem with them being ripped off in Texas, he's the one that got a bodyguard that went down to see about that. Is that right?
He asked another member of the conspiracy, will you come down to?
Right, to try to straighten that situation out.
Right. That isn't necessarily evidence of control, which I think is where the sentencing guidelines are what they're most concerned about with this type of enhancer. We don't know how that was Jeremy Fern that you're speaking of, Judge Williams, and we don't know how he became connected to the group, if he was in it before Fisher asked him to do that, if he wanted to do it. At one point it says in here that all of these members were drug dealers, so Fern maybe had his own reasons for wanting to go along as well. It's just not clear from the PSR. I think I'm in my rebuttal time at this point. Thank
okay,
you.
Thank you, Ms. Wall. Ms. Rumbelow?
Good morning, Your Honor. As the court has recognized, Mr. Fisher did not object at the sentencing hearing to the conclusion that he shared a larger share of the profits of this crime. And the PSI, paragraph 40, then also states that he claimed the right to a larger share of the fruits of the crime as he provided the majority of the financial backing to purchase the cocaine in Texas. As the court has already recognized, he did provide the first $10,000 for the first trip, but the uncontested facts in the pre-sentence report also indicate that he provided the financial backing for trips 2, 3, 5, and as the court has also recognized, he paid people to go to Texas. He paid Chris Mullen. Every time Chris Mullen went to Texas, he was paid by Sean Fisher. He wasn't paid by Bubbles. He wasn't paid by anybody else, and those are all uncontested facts in the PSI. He did get Jeremy Fern to go along as a bodyguard type after the group had money stolen from them in Texas. He recruited Chris Kinney to go along. He wanted Chris Kinney's car. He reduced Chris Kinney's drug debt. Your Honor, again, the facts are all uncontested. Mr. Fisher did not make any objections at the sentencing hearing. In fact, what Mr. Fisher did state at the sentencing hearing is that he directed others to protect his investment. Clearly, there are more than enough facts in the record to support the district court's 3B1.1B enhancement for Mr. Fisher in this case. Does the court have any questions?
Okay, thank you, Ms. Romero.
Thank you.
Ms. Ball, how much time does she have? 1 minute?
I only have 2 points to make, Your Honors. One is that even if you assume that Fisher failed to object to the fruits of the crime point and give him the fact that he did claim a larger share of the fruit of the crime, all you also have in this record is he supplied money, but we don't know precisely what proportion, and he recruited 2 members to this conspiracy. The Seventh Circuit has decided a number of cases at the end of the spectrum that are close to Fisher's situation, like Vargas, where you had a defendant that had the authority to negotiate drug deals, sell on credit, and access storage, or Brown, where the defendant was a middleman in a conspiracy, sold drugs on credit, but then didn't use that credit to exert control over other members of the conspiracy. And Mustry, where the defendant asked the co-conspirator to transport drugs for him and another co-conspirator to buy him a pager to facilitate drug transactions. The point is that in these cases, the Seventh Circuit focused on the relative role of responsibility of the defendant, and it found that while the defendants in these cases exhibited some of the characteristics of a manager, on balance, it wasn't enough compared to the roles by other members of the conspiracy to sustain the manager enhancement in those cases.
Okay, thank you very much. And Ms. Ball, you were appointed, were you not?
Yes.
So the court thanks you for your vigorous efforts on behalf of the court.